This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Your source for Pan-African news and world developments, I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Kenya's high court has blocked the government from closing Dadaab refugee camp, home to about 258,000 Somali refugees. Rights groups filed the case after the government vowed to close the camp last May.
That's VOA's Jill Craig reporting from Nairobi. Details next.
Also, Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed has been elected as the new president of Somalia, and South Africa's embattled president Jacob Zuma is to make his annual State of the Nation speech today.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, Kenya's high court has blocked the government from closing Dadaab refugee camp, home to nearly 260,000 Somali refugees. Rights groups filed the case after the government vowed to close the camp last May. VOA's Jill Craig has more from Nairobi.
The largest refugee camp in the world will remain open, according to Kenyan High Court Justice John Mativo, who ruled Thursday that the government's orders to close the camp were discriminatory and indignifying.
That the government's decision, specifically targeting Somali refugees, is an act of group persecution, illegal, discriminatory, and therefore unconstitutional.
Mativo also stated that the disbanded Department of Refugee Affairs should be reinstated. In May 2016, the government announced it would be closing Dadaab, a massive refugee camp sheltering about 258,000 Somali refugees, by November. That move was then delayed for an additional 6 months. 24-year-old Mohamed Abdullahi Jamale is one of those who would have been affected by the camp's closure.
Really, that is the best ever news I've ever had, because somebody like me who was born and raised in the camps, who has never seen Somalia and who don't know anything about Somalia, is really welcoming this, and we really appreciate the rulings of the court.
But not everyone is pleased with the verdict. Kenya Ministry of the Interior spokesperson Mwenda Njoka says the government plans to appeal the ruling because its original motivation for closing the camp remains.
The main reason was security. The fact that the camps and started, they had lost their humanitarian character, and they became places where terrorists would come, Al-Shabaab, their sympathizers would go and plan the attacks on Kenya. So that has not changed. And the fact also that right now the Republic of Somalia has also stabilized significantly. They just elected a new president yesterday.
Deputy Regional Director for Amnesty International, Michelle Kagari, is pleased with the ruling, but acknowledges that Kenya has borne a disproportionate burden when it comes to hosting refugees.
And this is an opportunity really for Kenya to demonstrate leadership to ensure durable solutions to the refugee population, including pushing for rich governments, Western governments, to step up to the plate and take up their responsibility and share the burden with regards to hosting refugees.
According to UNHCR Kenya spokesperson Yvonne Ndege, Kenya has always been a hospitable country where people could seek protection and assistance.
And so this perhaps is a sign or a reinforcement of the kind of culture and attitude that Kenyans have towards their neighboring countries and the people of those countries who, for one reason or another, have had to flee here.
But regardless of the results of the appeal, Njoka says the Kenyan government will comply.
We operate within the confines of the law. So if we were to lose, we would definitely have to work with that. I mean, we can't defy a court order.
In addition to Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, the Norwegian Refugee Council, and Doctors Without Borders also released statements expressing their approval of the court's decision. Since mid-May 2016, when the Kenyan government announced its closure decision, almost 34,000 refugees have gone to Somalia through the UN Refugee Agency's Return Assistance Program. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Somalia has a new president. Yesterday, Parliament elected Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed in the second round of voting. He beat the incumbent, 184 votes to 97. Nevertheless, the way ahead looks anything but easy. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed took the oath of office Wednesday, soon after his victory was announced. In a short speech, the new president said, "This victory belongs to the people of Somalia. This victory is a start of building a united, peaceful and stable Somalia. This is the beginning of democracy and fighting corruption." Outgoing President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud won praise for how he conceded defeat Wednesday and wished his successor well. But the country is far from its aim of holding nationwide one-man, one-vote elections. Security is the main challenge. Parliament members had to be elected last year by clan leaders and regional representatives. Allegations of widespread vote-buying overshadowed the electoral process, including the presidential race. President Mohamed, or Farmajo as he is more commonly known, is well remembered for his time as Prime Minister under the transitional government. He served less than a year between 2010 and 2011, but is credited with paying the salaries of the country's security forces and government workers on time, including Parliament. International Crisis Group Horn of Africa analyst Rashid Abdi is optimistic about the choice.
There are feelings that if there is anyone who can do something about security, then it must be him, because, again, of his very good relationship with the security services. And we saw how, immediately the news came through that he had won, how the security forces themselves joined, local people to demonstrate, to welcome, that victory. And that support, I think, is probably also quite critical for him to succeed in stabilizing Somalia.
Somalia media reports government soldiers have not been paid for the past 6 months, something many hope will change and give the troops the morale needed to defeat al-Shabaab. The al-Qaeda terror group still carries out regular attacks and bombings in many parts of the country, including Mogadishu. The new president favours building up the national army so that it will be ready when the mandate of the African Union force in Somalia comes to an end next year. Abdi says analysts fear a push to assert Somalia's autonomy may create tensions, with the countries contributing to the regional force, in particular Ethiopia and Kenya.
If I were to advise him, I would tell him to proceed to go slow in relationship with these two neighbouring countries, and I think to build new bridges, and because I think they ultimately have a collective interest, joint interest, strategic interest in working together to stabilise Somalia.
Analysts point out Farmajo got votes in parliament from clans around the country. He's seen as a nationalist and a unifier, despite having spent much of his adult life in the United States, where he's also a citizen. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
South Africa's embattled president Jacob Zuma is to make his annual State of the Nation speech under a slow economy and low approval rating. But in recent years, South Africans have tuned in for political fireworks. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg. Analysts say they expect more drama than dogma in the speech today.
President Jacob Zuma's rhetorical positions and policy goals are rarely the highlight of his annual address to the South African people. The speech is a chance for the president to discuss progress the government has made and its policies for the coming year. But in recent years, speeches have been stopped by jeers from opposition members, expulsions, walkouts, and even police entering the chamber to try to restore order.
There's nothing that
Honorable
Zuma deserves
Malema,
from us
will join
in a form
group
of
that
a respect.
This chamber.
Zuma is no longer a president that deserves a respect from anyone. He has stolen from us.
Honorable
he has collapsed
members.
The economy of South Africa. He has made this country a joke. And after that, he has laughed at us. We cannot allow Zuma to do as he wishes in this country. We are not going to allow that. We are doing because we do not recognize
the
him
the Black
as our president.
Remove
he
the
is
members
not
who have
our
been
president.
Named.
Please.
That is far-left politician Julius Malema challenging the increasingly unpopular president during last year's address. This year, the presidency has summoned 441 soldiers to parliament for what it says is safety and security. That has drawn sharp criticism from opposition politicians, with Malema, the leader of the Economic Freedom Fighters, calling the move a declaration of war. Professor Susan Boysen of the University of the Witwatersrand says the drama is not entirely bad for the president.
In some respects, it seems almost as if President Jacob Zuma has been trying to distract attention from the content of the State of the Nation address. And that is especially through the developments in the last day or two around the security arrangements in particular.
Unemployment has risen overall since he took office in 2009. South Africa's currency, worth 8 rand to 1 US dollar when he became president, now hovers around 13 rand per dollar. And its instability has been neatly in sync with Zuma's unpopular political moves, like his decision to go through 3 finance ministers in a week in late 2015. Independent political analyst Ralph Matega says he expects Zuma to revisit the familiar issues of poverty, unemployment, and persistent inequality. But he also notes the speech is an opportunity for Zuma to define his legacy and defend his party. Zuma's successor as leader of the ruling African National Congress will be chosen at the end of this year and will likely be South Africa's next president in 2019. But the ANC no longer holds the supremacy it claimed when it took power in 1994. In last year's local election, it lost key municipalities to the opposition.
What is maybe different about this year's State of the Nation is that the ANC-led government will have to define itself, explain itself as to how it has performed in the last 21 years.
Matega will see the speech in person because he says it is the little details in the chamber that really matter. Who sits where, who walks the red carpet in which order, and how certain top political figures react. Anita Pal, VOA News, Johannesburg.
In delivering his address to the South Africa Parliament later today, President Jacob Zuma does so from a very weakened position. He's been battered by financial and corruption scandals and has faced strong resistance within the ANC ruling party. Reporter Didier Robertson has been following Zuma's troubled presidency. From Johannesburg, she spoke to VOA's Jody Kepoa.
Basically, all the scandals that have surrounded him and in which he seems to have been a central player have finally caught up with him. In the past several months, he's had direct challenges to his authority within the ruling African National Congress. At a meeting of the executive of the party, a proposal was put to the meeting that he be dismissed from his post. That didn't pass. But then shortly after that, Chief Whip of the party in Parliament called on him to step down. This has been a severe disruption to his power base.
Would you first summarize the financial scandal and then the corruption scandal that he is now facing?
Well, the financial scandal came about when he fired the former finance minister, Mr. Nene, and put in his position a person who had no background or experience, who was very unknown. This all happened in December 2015. There was such a backlash to the extent that a few days later, he was forced to fire Des van Rooyen and reinstate Pravin Gordhan, who has been finance minister in the past and a very efficient and successful one.
So why would he dismiss him?
The feeling is that he wanted somebody in that position that he could order around. The target of Mr. Zuma and his family and his cronies, such as the Gupta family, are believed to have been the actual treasury, to find ways of diverting funds, state funds, to strange business interests through state-owned companies, to individuals and that sort of thing.
Now, this financial scandal is on top of the scandal surrounding the millions of dollars he has to repay for renovations at one of his homes.
Well, it was more than renovation. It was the building of a huge estate with several homes to accommodate his various wives, an amphitheater, a swimming pool, which they euphemistically called a fire pool, saying it was needed to fight potential fires. The total bill was around $14 million. Subsequently, he was ordered by the Constitutional Court to pay back at least some of the money. I believe it was about $3 million.
Now, there were also corruption allegations against the president. I believe these involve the influential Gupta family.
Yes, this family is a family that came to South Africa from India and gradually gained more influence with people in power, including Mr. Zuma. And this was shown 3 years ago when they flew their private aircraft into a South African Air Force base near Pretoria to bring all their guests for a family wedding. Mr. Zuma's son is very closely linked to this family. Mr. Zuma is closely linked to this family. They have gotten contracts for all kinds of government jobs. They have been awarded mining licenses. Many, many enterprises are involved here.
That's reporter Delia Robertson in Johannesburg. She spoke to VOA's Jody Kapowa.
Coming up on 21 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Well, some children from the DRC who've been adopted by Italian families may have been taken from their biological families in exchange for money. The children were part of a group who arrived in Italy as orphaned migrant children. That announcement comes from Silvia Della Monica, vice president of the Italian government's Commission on International Adoptions. From Milan, reporter Josephine McKenna is following the story and provides us with details.
We're hearing that three children who were adopted by Italian families from the Democratic Republic of Congo may have been taken or allegedly were taken from their families for money, and that is under investigation. Silvia Della Monica, the vice president of the government body responsible for international adoption, says it is being investigated, so judicial authorities have been notified and further investigation is taking place. But if this is true, it's certainly very alarming.
Do you have any information on what either families are saying, the families from the children, also the adopted families?
We haven't had any information or any feedback from the families concerned. These children are believed to be among a group of 18. They were the last group out of a total of 66 children that were approved for adoption by the DRC last June. They were the last group to have received approval. This has been a very complicated issue between Italy and the DRC over the last couple of years. For a very long time, dozens of adoptions were blocked by the Democratic Republic of Congo. After intense negotiation between the two countries, the adoptions finally went through. It's a very complicated issue, and now there will obviously be further investigation to find out what's really happened regarding these three children.
Do you have the status on the rest of the children? There were a total of 66 children, I understand.
It was certainly a very joyful occasion for the Italian families who have waited several years for the final approval of these adoptions. But when they finally came through, it was a big deal in Italy. And the Italian foreign minister at the time, Paolo Gentiloni, who's now the prime minister, even expressed his satisfaction and thanked the authorities for making this possible. But since the children actually arrived in Italy, we've heard very little from the families as they have been trying to settle the children into Italian society and make a transition. But certainly, this issue has had a lot of attention in Italy over the last few years. The Italians were negotiating for some time in a very lengthy process to adopt these individual children, to take them into their families. I imagine there was extensive research done before they could be released from the Democratic Republic of Congo. So you would assume that all the checks had been conducted, that they were indeed orphans looking to be adopted by Italian families. And so if these children are found to have been adopted by Italian families for money, taken from their own families for money, this is certainly going to set a precedent and probably result further investigation of the other cases as well.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Milan.
Zimbabwe authorities have released a pastor facing a charge of trying to subvert President Robert Mugabe's government. He was released a day after the country's high court had granted him $300 bail. Sebastian Momfu has more from Harare.
Please come out so that we can...
Those were journalists outside Chikurubi Maximum Prison begging Pastor Ivan Mawarire to get out of the vehicle he was in and talk to them. Mawarire refused, saying he feared for the prison official's security. After a while, he had this to say before driving off.
It's been 9 days. I'd like to see my family. I'd like to rest and just, think about a few things. But, it's something I appreciate. My lawyers have worked very hard to get us to this stage, and I want to just appreciate that. But I'm glad to be back home and glad to be a free man, at least, so that I can enjoy Zimbabwe.
Are you demoralized?
Yeah. No, not at all. I'm happy. My spirits are up.
Mawarire was arrested at Harare International Airport last week on arrival from the United States, where he had been on a six-month-long self-imposed exile. Last week, a lower court said the charge against him of trying to topple a constitutionally elected government was a, quote, third schedule offense, unquote. That led to his lawyer, Harrison Nkomo, making a bail application at the High Court. The application was granted on Wednesday, but Mawarire could not be released then as paperwork involved could not be finished. His arrest attracted worldwide condemnation, including from the U.S. government and human rights groups. Muleya Mwananyanda, Amnesty International's Deputy Director for Southern Africa, said granting bail to the clergyman was not something to celebrate.
Pastor Mawarire is being subjected to political persecution through the courts for exercising his freedom of expression. His continued persecution has a chilling effect on peaceful activism in Zimbabwe. The release of Pastor Mawarire on bail is not enough. The politically motivated charges against him must be completely withdrawn. The state cannot continue to harass and intimidate him simply for standing up for human rights. The actions of the state go against the principles of justice and demonstrate a systematic targeting of those who dare to hold the government to account.
Mawarire rose to prominence last April when he posted a Facebook video of himself wrapped in a Zimbabwean flag criticizing the state of the country. The video sparked the hashtag This Flag protest movement against the government. Mawarire begged a general strike last July, calling for the Mugabe government to respect human rights and save Zimbabwe's ailing economy. Besides the charge of subversion, which carries a 20-year sentence, Mawarire faces another charge of, quote, insulting the national flag of Zimbabwe, unquote, for using it in his videos. Initially, he was charged with inciting violence, but a court ruled that police had violated his rights and released him by changing the charge. He fled the country soon after. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next on Let's Talk, Love and Valentine's Day in America. Do you have a Valentine? Join host Sunday Shumari and his guests discussing love and Valentine. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.